This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
And horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
All right, Mike, as the standings in the NBA's Western Conference heat up, the Nuggets are just trying to stay, I would say at this point, a nice goal for them is to stay within the top six, to stay out of the play-in situation. But the big dreams are that they could chase down a Spurs or an Oklahoma City team. They are 7.5 games behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here's why that might be achievable. The Nuggets play the Thunder tomorrow night. I am really looking forward to Friday Night Basketball, Nuggets Thunder. But it might not be setting up to be the matchup that a lot of fans want. If that game looks anything like the Thunder's game last night against the Detroit Pistons, by the time the game ended, Detroit won 124-116. The Thunder were without their top six scorers. They started the game already without its four leading scorers. Shea was out with his abdomen thing, which I think he's still going to be out for tomorrow night's game, and maybe even longer. Jalen Williams out with a hamstring injury. Ajay Mitchell is out with an abdomen. Chet Holmgren back. And then Isaiah Hartenstein out with a calf injury. So, and then as the game went on, Brandon Carlson went down with a back injury, unable to play. The Thunder are in a really tough spot, kind of where the Nuggets were earlier. Question will be, can they survive some of this? Now, their injury report, they've got Carlson listed as day-to-day. They've got Hartenstein listed as day-to-day. Chet listed as day-to-day. Caruso listed as day-to-day. Isaiah Joe listed as day-to-day now, as he missed the rest of the Detroit game. Mitchell's listed as out. Shea still listed as out. And Jalen Williams still listed as out. You don't root for injuries, Mike, but you root to take advantage of injuries. And now that the Nuggets are trying to get whole and Aaron Gordon and Peyton Watson might be rejoining this Nuggets roster very soon, this would be your opportunity to strike. Tomorrow night's game would be suddenly becomes a massive game for the Nuggets. And when you look at the rest of or the start of March, for this team, you're going up against the Thunder team that I think now that game seems maybe achievable, even if you had full rosters on both sides. Home against Minnesota on Sunday, you got a back-to-back. You're going up against Utah. You can't lose to Utah. They've got NBA doctors going over there to make sure they're not up to any funny business, which they already are. And then next Thursday, the Lakers. So big games coming up here. Well, I guess the Knicks on Friday. This is going to be a tough week for the Nuggets, but I tell you, if they can come out of this thing, I don't know, let's say 3-2? 4-1, whew, you're in business. 3-2, you're feeling pretty good. And then you have OKC coming up on Monday, March 9th. So certainly interesting to see how the Nuggets react to tomorrow night's game, which I think actually becomes pretty significant. The Colts grant quarterback Anthony Richardson okay to seek a trade. Anthony Richardson is likely on the move. It was a shock when Daniel Jones beat him out in the preseason last year. I was shocked by it. I think people probably close to the Colts situation, maybe not so much. But where are you at on Anthony Richardson? Like, is this what he needs? Is a new start? Do you think this guy can still be a starting caliber quarterback in the league, or is he going to be a bounce around as a backup quarterback from now on?
I think he's going to be a bounce around. I think he's got 3-4 more years left tops as a backup quarterback. Then he'll be coaching high school somewhere.
Oh, really? Wow, you're that far out on him.
I mean,
that's a tough one.
You sit down on the bench.
That's a tough one.
Take yourself out.
When was he drafted, Mike?
Isn't this going to be his third year?
He was drafted. Was he the fourth pick in 2023? So this would be his. Yeah, we're coming up on his fourth year.
You can't blame the Colts for this. You can't say, are just bad, so you don't know what kind of quarterback he is.
The Colts were a contender when Daniel Jones was in. And when he went out, that's when they called up a high school coach and Phillip Rivers to come be their quarterback. That's how little they believed. And I know Richardson battled injuries and everything, and then he was ultimately out. But that's how little they believed all the rest of their quarterbacks on this team was they're going to call Phillip Rivers up. But they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender halfway through the season. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
How Daniel Jones
was
playing?
Absolutely. People were afraid of them.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they beat Denver, and Daniel Jones looked like a completely different person. So you can't blame the Colts organization for how that went down when you see a Daniel Jones who you can blame the Giants organization for how he went down, goes over to the Colts, and suddenly they're in talks to go to the Super Bowl this season. Then when he goes down, all hell breaks loose. So I'll be really interested to see, A, where Anthony Richardson goes, and if he's going to be on a team that gives him a shot, probably go to Cleveland. That'd be a good fit for him, don't you think?
I mean, he won't improve.
Might as well put another guy in there that has been a starter to compete for that job over there.
And I don't see Shador losing that job. He's too popular.
You think he's going to win it over Deshaun Watson?
Yeah. Deshaun wasn't good. He was bad when he was in. He was just bad.
So you would go with
Shador
Sanders.
Shador is popular enough, and Deshaun is bad enough.
I don't know. I don't know if they'll go that route. I mean, they're paying him so much money to back up Shador Sanders, who you're saying was all right when he was in. He was all right. He was fine.
He's a Pro Bowler.
He's a Pro Bowler. You can't take that away from him now. NBA MVP odds. I had a texter. Was that Eastside Chris yesterday wanting to know where Luka sat on the MVP odds at this point? Right now, according to ESPN, Shea is the odds-on favorite, who is still out, by the way. He missed his 12 games now for him. You have to play in how many? 17? Players who miss more than 17 games, so you can't miss 18. Shea is now at 12. Joker can miss one or two more games, but he is listed as the second favorite to win the MVP. Cade Cunningham, who is I love watching this guy play basketball. I love listening to him talk. We went over some of that piece last week from, whatever magazine it was, and him talking about the real issues that surround the NBA, and I thought it was fascinating. So Cade Cunningham there. You got Wemby, fourth on the list, then Jaylen Brown, then Luka. So Eastside Chris, for your betting purposes, you're going to need Luka to ball out in a big, big way, because he's kind of at the bottom. I don't know that neither Shea or Joker are going to end up qualifying for this. I mean, Shea obviously has a better chance, but I would imagine he doesn't play tomorrow night. So that would put him at 13. And then you're starting to get close to that. Joker's certainly on life alert when it comes to the MVP race.
because he can't miss really. I think he can just afford to miss one more game. And again, he's won three MVPs. I don't think, I mean, that right there is a Hall of Fame career. I would imagine he'll win another one before, at least one more MVP before it's all said and done. But I just don't think the Nuggets organization cares at this point. They're not going to jeopardize, even if there's a slight chance that he is banged up and re-injury or something is going to set him back. You're not going to run him into the ground with 23 games remaining. You're not. If he's healthy, you're rolling with him. But if there's any indication that he's not right in a certain game, they're going to be careful because this team's trying to prove that they are a legitimate contender. And right now, it's the Thunder, and it's probably the Spurs. The Spurs are a really good team. I mean, they are right on the heels of the Thunder. They've had the Thunder's number quite a bit this year. I think they've won, like, how many have they won in a row? I mean, they're on a tear right now. The Spurs are, I think they've won like 12 in a row. But that's a team that just is really buying in to everything. You got De'Aaron Fox. You got you got Wimby playing sensational basketball right now. And Dylan Harper coming off the bench. That's going to be a scary, scary team. And I want that matchup in the playoffs. I don't know if the Nuggets win that matchup, but I want that matchup to see how Joker tries to answer what Victor Wembanyama is all about. Because that guy's probably going to be a household MVP name. He's probably going to take over the league. He already kind of is. He's averaging 24 points per game right now, 11 rebounds per game, and he's a monster. He's one of those players I was talking about on Good Morning NoCo. It's like, there's a lot of tall dudes. Like, if Shaq was 6'6", would he be an NBA player? Would he be as dominant as he? No, because he can't shoot. He can't dribble. Victor Wembanyama can do everything. Just so happens, he's a very large human. De'Aaron Fox, still don't know. I know Kings fans are still just so disappointed that he got away, but he's having a great season. Stephon Castle's having a good season. I think he's a little banged up right now. But that Spurs team is really good. First Advantage text line is 888-530-0043. Michael, when we come back, I want to talk about this story from Ross Dellinger at Yahoo Sports. Changes to the college football calendar and transfer policy might be on the way. Common sense might be stepping in here as this week the NCAA Football Oversight Committee had some deep conversations about several concepts related to the calendar and transfers, including a proposal to impose stiff penalties on schools that accept transfers outside of the portal window. So there's the window. You can enter the portal. You can enter it. There's currently no bylaw or anything against you from, even though the portal window closed, you can still exit the portal window and get on with the team, which I always thought was kind of odd. This is a way, I believe, of encouraging players to not enter the portal because the risk of you not getting picked up within the window would be too great unless you are that guy. This would help the UNCs of the world, the CSUs of the world. A lot of guys enter the portal and they don't get picked up right away. They sign on with the team later, maybe in the spring. And hey, even if we're not getting picked up in the first wave or second wave, it's going to be like free agency, you still can get on a team. Well, I think this is the NCAA Football Oversight Committee's way of trying to discourage you from entering the portal. So let's get into that on the other side. We'll take a short break here. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. Big changes for college football for the better. We'll talk about it coming up next.
For Avalanche games and talk, keep it on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Hey everybody, Steve Smiley, head men's basketball coach at the University of Northern Colorado, and you are listening to the whole show on KFKA.
So for a long time, we've been trying to figure out ways to slow down the transferring. And this is a big change here. Ross Dellinger, senior college football reporter for Yahoo Sports, noting the meeting that took place this week amongst the NCAA Football Oversight Committee, discussed several concepts. Talking about the calendar and transfers, including a proposal to impose stiff penalties on schools that accept transfers outside of the portal window. So still allowing it to happen, but we're going to penalize you if you do. The penalties include a multi-million dollar fine, multi-game suspensions for head coaches, and the loss of roster spots. This is fascinating. Does this have teeth? We'll see, but the idea right now is you can enter the transfer portal and during the window, but once the window's closed, you can still get on a team. You just once it's closed, you can't enter the portal anymore. And now they only have one in football, one transfer period, and that's in January. So you have to how long does it go, Mike? Like January 2nd through 16th or something like that? It's like a 2-week deal. Well, this would try to steer teams away from getting guys that are in the portal, but they maybe didn't get picked up in the second or third or fourth wave of this. A couple other things that were talked about, too, is keeping the transfer portal window in January, giving coaches flexibility to move some spring practices to the summer, and allowing schools to open the season in week zero starting in 2027. Week zero should be week one. B, aren't we ready to do away with spring football? Just have them do what the NFL does. Have them meet up in the summer. Yeah, again, you're asking your athlete. Athletes are there a lot anyway. Like they're on campus a lot anyway, Michael. It's not like they get to go away for 3 months in the summer like most college students do. So you might as well. Like, I always thought it was odd to have spring football in March and you're installing things and you're trying to figure out what the depth chart might look like. So many things change in a few months. Now, do I go to spring stuff? Yeah. Like, CSU's getting ready to start their spring ball. I think CU starts spring ball Monday, less than a week after losing their defensive coordinator, which they did replace. UNC going out to there, it's fun, but I've never really understood how much of a benefit spring ball really is. If you could, now again, coaches aren't going to hate. Coaches are going to take advantage of any opportunity they get to have more practices. But I would imagine if you poll head coaches in Division I football, they'll tell you we'd much rather have spring ball in the summer, summer ball, some kind of July thing, kind of like the NFL does with OTAs and mini camp. Have a mini camp, break for a week or two, and then start your fall camp. I think that would be I think that would just make sense. It's not something I have a ton of energy on. I don't care either way, but I just find it odd. Is it ruining college football? No. But it's just one of those odd things that they do. Also, the transfer portal window, keeping it in January. Now, this oversight committee is led by Buffalo Athletic Director Mark Allnut and Georgia Athletic Director Josh Brooks. They spent the last 2 days meeting in Indianapolis over the calendar and transfer situation. These are potential recommendations, and it's not, you know, there's nothing to paper yet. I don't know how serious this is right now. But the recommendations are going to try to be, they're going to try to formalize these recommendations this spring to ultimately get approved by the D1 cabinet. The most significant of these concepts at this stage, penalties levied on a school and head coach for accepting a transfer outside of the portal window. What the penalties might look like. So they're trying to limit any movement this spring. But here's the thing. As Ross Dellinger noted in Yahoo Sports, this could spark legal challenges from players and or schools this spring and summer who wish to switch schools, who recruit a player to their school. So you can't do it now. Damn sure can't do it now. You have to make this a year in advance so you know. So you certainly couldn't do that. The NCAA just recently moved from the two portals. They had a December portal and an April portal. The problem with the April portal is you get them in spring ball, Mike, and let's say you're a fourth-string running back on the Bears or the Rams or whatever, and you're not feeling it. You're not getting the vibe from the coaches that you're even going to be fourth string, third string, and you don't like the way it's looking. So you enter the portal. So you've gone through spring ball and you're installing stuff. You know, you're trying to put things together. And Billy decides, yeah, for whatever reason, I'm not feeling it with this coaching staff. I don't know where I'm going to be on the depth chart, so I'm out the door. Yes, Mike.
Or you're Ole Miss and you recruit someone, and you're like, hey, can you bring some of that offensive philosophy that they have?
You're also you're privy to some pretty good information in spring ball, and if you transfer and you so happen to transfer, you enter the portal in April and you transfer to a team. That was in your conference, especially, or even just a team you know that they're going to be playing the following year, coaches might find those guys just for that purpose. So that was an obvious change they needed to make. It's cleaner, just have one transfer portal window. So the idea for these new penalties for a team taking a player that outside of the window, they would serve as a deterrent for schools that wish to build up their roster with players from other schools after spring practice. That was a big one. They also called that in April blind transferring. When a player unenrolls at one school and enrolls at another outside of the portal window, the 15-day portal window in January, so it is 15 days, is meant to be the only route in which players can communicate with coaches from another school, which is not happening, without university staff members violating the NCAA's tampering bylaws. But again, if you're in the portal, even outside of the 15-day, Michael, what they're calling that is the blind transfer. Do you really believe that once you're at day 16, so you're outside of the portal transfer window, but you're still in the portal, you really believe they're not in communication with anyone at their potential new school? How in the hell do they know they're going to want to go to that potentially new school? And how do we know the school wants them potentially?
Well, yes, Brady, everything is on the up and up.
Yeah, so that one's an obvious one. They're already talking to them. But if you catch them in the act, I mean, they're talking coach suspensions, multi-million-dollar fines, big-time deals here if you take a player outside of the window. But, Michael, aren't there already pretty severe punishments in place if you tamper outside of the portal window anyway? Like, it is illegal for head coach or anyone on that staff to try to get Billy to their team before entering the portal. But the age-old question on all this is, how does a good player know he's going to get picked up? How does any player know he's going to get picked up if he enters the portal? Isn't it all supposed to be blind transferring?
I mean, if you're a really, really good player, you know you're going to get picked up. If you think you're a good player, if you're like a good player for your college, if you're a good player for CSU, maybe.
Yeah, but still.
You ain't going to Alabama and starting.
But you're not supposed to know. You're not supposed to have an idea. Like, Langston Reynolds, who transferred from, he left UNC, entered the portal, then went to Minnesota. I love and respect Nico Medved as a head coach. Am I really to believe that there was no communication to Langston Reynolds before he entered the portal that he would be on it would be a move up to enter that?
Not on his regular cell phone, on the secret cell phone.
Or somebody's messaging him that shouldn't message him. It's like, okay, so like Carver Cheeks turned out to be a really good receiver for the Bears. I actually think all that was legitimate. He entered the portal thinking there was going to be a better opportunity for him. There was nothing.
I mean, it's possible one of his friends was contacted by somebody, but, you know, was he contacted by an actual school?
And he didn't get any, according to him, anything that he got would have been a step below or a lateral move. So just moving to another team within the Big Sky.
Yeah, this is, I think a lot of these moves are mom and dad saying, oh, you can get a better place, or friends going, oh man, you're so good at this. A lot of it is ego boosting and not based on reality. I'm sure there's an expert out there. There's going to be a company in the next 5 years that's going to rank transfer portal people.
They already do. It's already a thing.
I mean, like, it's going to be a serious, like, as serious as Vegas betting.
That's kind of happening too, which they're trying to eliminate.
Stop. Yeah. But I remember you talking about
There's actually sites where you go on. And I don't know how to get to these sites, but I'm sure they're out there. I know coaches have told me this. There's what they call worth sites, where you go on and you see what your value is. If you were to transfer, here's what you would get paid, which is, again, so out of this world, because you're not supposed to know how much you're getting paid. You're supposed to enroll at the school first, and then you start doing endorsement deals and all that. It was never designed to be that way.
Who's running this? Mel Kiper? Are these all theoretical? Like, it feels illegitimate. It feels like this guy's had one good year at this school. We don't know how great all the athletes are. Is it the athlete? Is it the coach?
Mm.
It feels sus.
Yeah. How about this story from kind of keeping with this conversation? Mark Schlabach for ESPN. Cincinnati sued former quarterback Brendan Sorsby in federal court Wednesday, alleging he breached his NIL contract with the Bearcats when he refused to pay a $1 million exit fee after he transferred to Texas Tech. Which, have I not said, exit fees should be a part of all of this? Have I not said that if my guy transfers and then gets on a team, we need $1 million or whatever it is. We need to have that, whether it's your team paying it or whether it's you paying it. We need it.
It's a smart idea, and he should read his contract.
That's what Cincinnati is saying, that he refused to pay a $1 million exit fee after he transferred to Texas Tech. And I even take it one step further. So make that the school's responsibility. If you want this player badly enough, you got to pay the school. I think it absolutely sucks, almost cussed, that teams can find diamonds in the rough, build them up, develop them, and they get nothing to show for it. The school, like Dalton Connect, obviously, go to Tennessee. That's amazing for him. But nobody would have known Dalton Connect had it not been for Steve Smiley and this coaching staff. And all they get for it is to say that we had that guy that was really good and was like one of the best players in college basketball for Tennessee and got drafted in the first round. That's all we get. I mean, yeah, that's a cool thing to have, and it's a good recruiting story to use. I just think that there should be money involved. And I'm not talking a massive amount of money, but I think there should be money involved.
Not a bad thing. Maybe the new school, Tennessee, pays UNC.
So the lawsuit here, filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Ohio, seeks $1 million in liquidated damages, which the school said Sorby was contractually obligated to pay within 30 days of transferring. It's very smart by Cincinnati to do this. I don't know how on the up and up it is, but it's smart. Sorsby reportedly signed an NIL agreement with the Red Raiders that will pay him between $4 million and $6 million this season. Well, I mean, we know Texas Tech has the money. They have all the oil money, Michael. Here's what the university said in a statement. In his lucrative NIL agreement with Cincinnati Athletics, Brendan Sorsby committed to stay and play for two seasons as a proud Bearcat representative. He also agreed that if he left the university before that time, he would pay the university a specific amount for the substantial harm that his breach would cause. Cincinnati Athletics intends to enforce that contractual commitment. As stewards of the university's resources, the athletics department has a duty to do so. We thank Brendan for his time at Cincinnati and wish him success in the future. So this was allegedly an 18-month NIL contract with the Bearcats that covered the 25-26 seasons. And it was set to expire on December 15th, 2026. The university claims Sorsby notified the football team on December 1st that he was done playing for Cincinnati and wouldn't compete in their postseason game against Navy in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Sorsby entered the portal on January 2nd, immediately signed an NIL deal with the Red Raiders. The lawsuit then goes on to claim that Sorsby violated the terms of his NIL deal with Cincinnati when his image appeared on a large digital billboard in New York's Times Square announcing his commitment to Texas Tech. Sorsby's agent said this in a statement, that the lawsuit is misguided. He went on to say, this is Ron Slavin of Lyft Management, his agency and his agent. University of Cincinnati, through its revenue share structure, paid him $875,000 for a season he fully completed, and in that time, he generated millions in value for the program. Attempting to recover those funds now sends the wrong message to current and future student athletes and risks damaging the long-term credibility of Cincinnati football. This is further disappointing, given that Brendan parted ways with UC in what was a mutually agreeable manner. The money the university seeks to recover from him is nothing more than an unlawful penalty under Ohio law.
Was it in his contract?
That's what Cincinnati's saying. It was an NIL agreement that he signed.
If you sign a contract and it's in your contract, you should have to pay.
Now, Cincinnati is the first college athletics program to sue a former player for liquidated damages after breaking an NIL contract. I mean, if it's black and white in a contract and says, if you leave, here's what you owe. If you leave before this two-year deal runs out, is Cincinnati going to be... Who's going to win this case?
Depends on Ohio law.
Duke officials sued their former quarterback, Mensa, on January 20th in an attempt to prevent him from transferring to Miami and try to enforce a multi-year NIL contract that he signed with the Blue Devils. They reached a settlement in that deal, so there could be a settlement here. Aaron says, I'm glad to see colleges starting to hold these athletes accountable as professionals. I think Cincinnati should be in the right here if it said that in the language of the contract that he signed. If it didn't, then they're screwed. But this is what schools need to start doing now. If you leave us, we are owed $1 million. Whether that's by you or the team that gets you, we will be owed $1 million. So that's for you to tell your team, hey, guys, I entered the portal. If I leave, whoever I go with, I now am on the hook for $1 million. So can we negotiate that into my deal?
Now, the one thing is, didn't he make less than $1 million at UC?
According to the agent, he was around $800,000.
Yeah, so that's the only thing I would find suspicious. Unless there's wording that says if you make a certain amount, you owe us $1 million. I'd find that to be
that's
an egregious
what's
fine.
Clunky on this, because I don't know if they just flat out put you owe us $1 million.
You can't find someone more than what they're making.
It can't be a target. You know, oh, well, you just went and made $5 million. Now you owe us $1 million. 44 minutes after the hour, Michael. Let's jump out real quick and get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hey, this is Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. You're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
I'll read a couple of texts, Mike. We've blown the clock. Every time we talk about college football or college sports, we tend to blow the clock. Did you notice that?
Because the NCAA does things wrong.
Faith says, I think the school getting the player needs to hold the financial responsibility. I think so. Eastside Chris says, Brady, glad to hear these athletes are being held to contract obligations. Also loved your touch on school compensation for basically poaching a player. UNC Athletic Department could really use it. Lights and locker rooms. Oh, lights might be coming, Mike. Lights might be coming. It sounds like they will, actually. 49 minutes after the hour. It's a whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. Kevin Lytle joining me at 1 o'clock. We got Rams Weekly. All things Colorado State coming up very, very soon. Do not touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Anything slow down the Colorado Avalanche? Find out with us on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Cody Tucker with 7220sports.com, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The whole show here, and then Kevin's going to join me in the 1 o'clock hour. Don't look now, but the Rams are doing kind of what they did last season. They're going on a crazy run to end the season here. Now, last year, they were a good team. They had that guy, though. That guy, they could just get on his back. If things were looking tough, they got on his back. Do they have that guy? Or is this 100%? Like, no, this is a team effort. On any given night, it could be any guy. So we'll get into that with Kevin. Also, I'll get his thoughts on the Russ Dellinger report, how that will impact Colorado State going forward on the football side of things as well. All that and more coming up on Rams Weekly on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.